Happy Friday, Nashville. Welcome in, Chase and Michelle. I'm Michelle Knezovic. Junie Riddle in for Chase McCabe. Nick Keyser with us. We are live from our game studios presented by Hiller Plumbing, Heating and Cooling and Electrical. If you want to watch us streaming today, you can watch us streaming on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook every single day. Our stream is brought to you by Superbook Sports. We got a lot to talk about today, Junie. First off, right off the bat, Tennessee Volunteers fall last night in the Sweet 16 to FAU, a game we talked a lot about yesterday. And today I'm asking the question, and I'm asking this all show long. Call us, text us, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We want to hear from you, Vols fans. We want to hear from you how you're feeling after last night's game, and what is the temperature of the fan base last night, or this morning, today, as a whole? How do you view this college basketball season? Because the Tennessee Volunteers have experienced teams like this, and what always comes around to bite them in the butt, when you get to this time of year, the conversation always becomes Rick Barnes cannot win in March, Junie. He's 27-27 right now. And that's, I mean, dead even. You're 500 on the money. But, you know, the argument is, well, he gets paid like a coach who makes multiple Final Four appearances up there with the Izzos, with the Cows, with the Krzyzewskis. So, Vols fans, how do you feel? Are you disappointed? Are you ready just to move on to football season?
Or baseball season.
Oh, yeah, or baseball. Yeah, baseball. Baseball's first.
Great baseball team down there in Knoxville.
But the team had the opportunity last night. FAU, a very good team. We talked about it a lot yesterday. Team's only lost three times all year long. But you saw it. You saw the path. And we were just, you, me, and Nick were just talking a second ago. Beginning of the game, Tennessee was up, I think, 10, 12 or something like that. I'm like,
I don't know if they ever got to that point, though. I think there was one point, and it was super early. I think it
super,
was like,
super early.
I think it was like 17 or
20.
Or 18 to 7. It was like 18 to 7. And I think that was the only point in time that the Vols went up double digits in the game. And then after that, I had texted you this after the game. I was like, the writing was kind of on the wall for me, because I'm seeing the way that FAU is playing, and visually, I'm watching the game in the first half and not paying attention to the score. And I'm like, oh, Tennessee is dominating this game.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like they should have been up by 15, 14 points, yet they were only up consistently, you know, through majority of the first half. I know they kind of jumped out of the gate quickly, but they really only held like a 5-point, 7-point lead throughout the half. The thing that FAU kept doing was, although Tennessee in the first half was really dominating on the offensive glass, you know, they were getting a lot of turnovers. I mean, Tennessee won the turnover battle 2-1. I think it was 12-6. They forced a bunch of turnovers on FAU, but what FAU did was they stayed calm, cool, and collected, and they waited for their opportunity, and they just kept themselves in striking distance of the Vols. And I just don't think, you know, outside of scoring, I mean, they dominated that first half, but they weren't getting buckets, and they weren't taking advantage of moments that FAU was giving them to really extend that lead. I mean, offensively, throughout the whole game, they were atrocious. It was just kind of covered up by how well they were playing defensively, how many second-chance opportunities they got, and that kind of overshadowed because they never lost that lead.
FAU, a team size-wise, when you match up, Tennessee has a size advantage. FAU out-rebounded them. And one of the things that I thought would have been the reason – if you told me Tennessee lost, I would have said major turnovers. They didn't have a lot of turnovers in the game.
I think they only had six.
They took care of the basketball, and what it came down to was FAU, first off, somehow they out-rebounded them.
Yeah.
And Tennessee's guards couldn't shoot. They had looks. and they just weren't falling, right? So I just can't put my finger on it. I mean, Rick Barnes has this long record of, you know, from the time he was at Providence, some of the teams there, to Texas, to here, of just not being able to succeed in March. But then I watched some of these games. I watched last night's game, and I can't put my finger on a specific coaching moment. I look at shots not falling, and point blank, guards not stepping up. We've talked a lot about Marquise Noel of Kansas State, and if you haven't watched Kansas State in this tournament, he is the best player. 18 assists last night, Jimmy.
19.
Oh,
he set an NCAA tournament record for most assists in a game. If he would have had one more assist, he would have had a 20-20 game in the NCAA tournament.
We would have seen that, and then Oscar Tshiebwe have a 20-20 points and rebounds.
Yeah.
I mean, just talk about complete dominance. But now I lost my point. Oh, here we go. Him as a guard on this team. It's players like that who take over a game and are the reason you win in the tournament. I just didn't see that Tennessee could consistently have one player they counted on to take over the game.
Well, I just think Tennessee fans, they raised their expectations up too high after the Duke game. You know, the Louisiana game in the first round, they barely slipped by. You know, they let them get back in the game after having an 18-point lead in the second half. Louisiana crept in, you know, because of Mayshak's free throws, they ended up pulling that one out. But, I mean, look at this Duke game. You know, they had less than 10 turnovers. They forced 15 turnovers on Duke. They shot 42% from three-point range against Duke. They shot 76% from the line against Duke, okay? Olivier Namqua.
Kamwa.
He had 30 points in that game against Duke, right? He had 6 points. There was not an elite score. Last night when they played FAU, this team looked absolutely horrible. There was an 18-4 run by FAU between around the 10-minute mark to around the 5.5-minute mark. They went on an 18-4 run. Tennessee shot 33% from the floor last night. Barely shot 25% from three. Their shot selection, the way they ran their offense, they were feeding the post and going down low earlier, but they didn't stick to it. They didn't stick to that. And that's what really cost them the game, was their lack of efficiency on offense and not taking advantage and pulling away in the first half when they were clearly dominating the game.
Olivia Kamwa, 6 points. Plavsvich, 8 points. Vescovy, 9. Josiah Jordan James, 10. Mayshak, 7. Tyreek Key, 5. Jonas Adu, 10. You can't win a game in March with that, with an offense like that. You can't. You can have the best defense in the country, and we've seen it from this Tennessee team. But when you have shooting nights like this and go so cold and don't have one guard.
And 58% from the free throw line as well. Let's not get it twisted. You know, they still had opportunities to stay in the game and they did not make their free throws.
We got a couple texts on the text line, Junie, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. A lot of fans, Vols fans texting in. Gary texts in and says, Plavsvich was trying to get in FAU's head, but instead he got in his own and couldn't convert on the other end. So he got the flagrant one out there midway through the game. B-Man texts in and says, typical Vols laying an egg. And Brian texts in and says, I have one request. Can somebody please tell Jared to stop guaranteeing victories? He had to be the biggest jinx of the state of Tennessee. Because everybody, Duke, I guarantee Duke will beat Tennessee. And then he said Tennessee should have beat FAU. But Jared came on the show this morning and I was talking to him before he went on with Robbie and Rex Road. And we asked the question, how and why? How consistently have we seen this Vols team make it into the tournament with really, really good teams, good defenses? I think of the Admiral Schofield, Grant Williams team. I think of the team last year that got knocked out by Michigan. And this year, the high level this team was performing at. Why consistently do we see performances like this from this team in March? That's the question I'm asking. That's the question I'm asking Vols fans today. Text us, call us, 615-737-1025. We want to know your reaction. How do you feel today? How do you feel about the state of Tennessee basketball? Are you satisfied? Do you want more? And how do you feel about Rick Barnes right now? Junie and I will discuss all on the other side, taking your texts, taking your calls, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Chase and Michelle on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the Game. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle in for Chase McCabe, Nick Keyser with us. And now we have Sean Henry joining us, Pred CEO and President, on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Happy Friday, Sean. It is just a great day. The Preds get a great overtime win last night. You got the Pecorine statue unveiling tomorrow. Also, back-to-back with the Kraken. How are you doing today?
Well, I was doing well until I tuned into you guys and then doom and gloom with UT. My gosh, they made the Sweet 16, for goodness sakes. Hey, you guys should be upbeat.
No dooming.
Look at your team. Your Kentucky team hasn't won a game in March in what, 5 years?
Sean.
Good gosh. Yes.
That one hurt.
Sean, there's not that much doom and gloom. We picked the FAU win on the show yesterday.
So you should be celebrating that. I tuned in. I almost drove off the road.
Hey.
And I'm sitting there in our lobby right now, all depressed. And I was like, wait a minute. We won last night. We get to play them again tomorrow. Pecorine was in the house last night. Kevin Klein, so many old players. We had a sponsor summit. It was exciting. Today we're going to have an employee event with Pekka. We're doing a statue build contest that I know I'm going to lose. And then tomorrow we get to unveil the statue of, you know, the best athlete our city has ever seen, period. You know, the best professional player any team has ever had in this city. And equally the best human. So it's a pretty exciting time.
So have you seen the real statue yet?
Heck and no.
No? Okay, so you are going to be just as surprised.
Well, I've seen a lot of pictures of the progress almost every day, but I've not seen the actual statue, and that is by design. You know, and when I was 9 years old, I peeked at a Christmas present once, and it was the sickest, nicest Nike sweatsuit you've ever seen. And then on Christmas morning, I watched my sister open, and she got the sickest, nicest Nike sweatsuit you've ever seen. And I got this old fuzzy ball, like knockoff giant sweatsuit that I got beat up wearing at school. So ever since then, I stopped peeking.
So you've been a part of this process, and as soon as you all announced that you'd be giving Pecorine a statue, it'd be in front of Bridgestone, I mean, everybody has been looking forward to this day for so long now. And Pekka's just impact on the Nashville community, you know, aside of his on-ice play, and he means so much to this city. What has it just been like, Sean, you know, going through this process? You said he's in town. How is he feeling? Is he excited? And I also love the time capsule idea. Who came up with that? And did you write a letter, fans? Just tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, you haven't had the chance to meet Pekka yet. It's a shame. And I hope you do have a chance. Because he's probably the most humble person you'll ever encounter, ever. And he's just a special guy. And he's also a sports nut and a sports fan. So, I mean, he's a fan of all the teams in town. He's every sport that's played. So he gets the magnitude of a statue going up for a player. Mm-hmm. But it's funny that it's going up for him. His humility kicks in, and he's so honored. He's so excited about it. Yet at the same time, there's a piece of him like, you know, why me type of thing. And that's what makes him so endearing, you know, to everyone. I mean, his whole family is here. I think he has, you know, 50 guests at the game last night, a few more for tomorrow. And it's nice that he just envelops himself in his family and his friends and brings them along for the fun, because he knows he wouldn't be here without them. So it's really special. And then, you know, the time capsule, you know, when buildings are built, you know, in the cornerstone, you always drop something in, they're going to be open 100 years later. We realized you can't tell the story of Pecorine's career without the love affair between he and the fans. You just can't. I mean, he's by far and away the most popular player we've ever had because of his play on the ice and because of what he's done off the ice, as you said so well. But it's that way throughout the whole community. Whether you're a hockey fan or not, you love Pekka. If you have to be a hockey fan, you really love Pekka. And, so how can we do that statue without really putting our fans right in the middle of it? So first we were going to, put everyone's name on a nameplate, melt it down, make it put a statue, and a sculptor kind of laughed and said, well, you can't do that, and here's why. we had a lot of great ideas and, eventually gave up to the time capsule one, because how special it will be for a 15-year-old kid that wrote that letter today to have that time capsule open when he's 50 years old. Wow. And he's there with his granddaughter or son or daughter, whatever it may be, to read what he wrote to Pekka when he was just a teenager. And that's what it's kind of about. And then you'll have guys my age who wrote a letter that I hope I'm here when I'm 90 years old and we open that time capsule in 35 years. But, our first granddaughter is due in a week. I want Charlotte to be there with her daughter, talking about, multi-generations, because that's what sports are. It's generational stories playing in the same building year in and year out. And hopefully we're standing on the same plaza playing in Bridgestone Arena in 35 years with people regaling each other with the great stories of Pekka Rinne and celebrating the 5 Stanley Cups between now and then, that none of them would have been possible without the work that Pekka Rinne did in this community for this team in the city.
We've got Sean Henry, president and CEO of the Nashville Predators, on. And just some details about this statue. It's 800 to 900 pounds. It'll be 11 feet, 11 inches tall. Rinne's actual gear, including stick, gloves, leg pads, were used to make the statue's bronze. I mean, that's just incredible. It's every bit Pekka Rinne. And the ceremony tomorrow will start at 10 a.m. I know you're speaking, Sean. What can fans expect in the ceremony tomorrow morning?
They can expect emotion. I mean, absolute raw emotion from everyone that's there, everyone that's part of it. Because you're going to remember the first time you saw, this tall, athletic guy walk on the ice for the very first time and get a win. You're going to remember his goalie goal. You remember when he shut Chicago out in their building 2 games in a row that launched us to the sweep of them in 2017. You're going to remember his last game when he threw a shutout. And then you're going to remember all the times he slowed down and spent some time to help launch Best Buddies with Barry Trotz, when he locked arms with Shea Weber to launch 365 Fund and change the lives of kids battling cancer and fund research that is increasing the cure rate of pediatric cancer every single day. All those things are going to be embroiled in one moment as we unveil the statue. And it's really special. And you have a sculptor. He's a day one season ticket holder. He's a fireman. He lives in Clarksville. When we got introduced to him, we've been spending a lot of time in Clarksville, obviously, and there's a statue in every street corner there, I think, and he's done quite a few of them. So we got to see his work, and it's even better that our artist is a fan of this team, and he, like Pekka, gives back every day as a fireman. So it all comes together so well. But I'll tell you, if you're coming, either wear long-sleeve shirts to wipe up some tears or bring tissues.
You totally stole my question from me, Sean. I was going to ask you about Scott Wise, but can you go in and talk to me a little bit about maybe something that you might put into the time capsule that you'll be looking forward to seeing in 35 years?
Well, the time capsule sealed. It's already under the ground.
Okay.
Nash laid it down for us the other day. Myself, my wife, our daughters, my sons, all wrote a note as well. It's all captured in there along with so many of our fans. And then there are a couple of things that were fun and key for his playing career. I know we had a little video and some list of what was in there. I don't like bringing it to life. I want people to be surprised in 35 years. And again, I'll be so old, I'll forget what was in there anyway. So I'll be surprised.
Absolutely. Secondly, yeah, is it this Saturday that it's Hockey Fights Cancer Night? Can you kind of touch a little bit on that and what y'all have going on for cancer research? I know the Nashville Predators historically have always been really good, kind of like you mentioned with Pekka Rinne and all that he's donated, but can you kind of touch into what's going to be going on with that?
Yeah, so it's our second Hot Fights Cancer of the year. We do two, because our fans are so good and so passionate and so generous. We can't contain all that in one night like most teams do. So this is our second one of the year. But it's a night that you get to celebrate all those that have been through a test that no one should have to go through. There are some very tearful, emotional moments, mission moments, where we remember those that we've all lost. We know, good remembrance of why we keep fighting, why we keep raising funds. So that's so important. But then we also celebrate quite a few kids that were mayors of Hockey Fights Cancer 10, 15, 20 years ago. We have a young man that I think is 28 years old that is now a oncologist, a pediatric oncology nurse. He went through treatment when he was, I think, 14 years old. And he was one of the first guys that Shea and Pekka kind of embraced when they launched 365. So a lot of those really nice moments. But it's about raising money. It really is. I mean, today we'll donate, I think, $400,000 or $500,000 to Vanderbilt. We'll be over there today with Pekka. That's the results of last year's Hockey Fights Cancer and so many of the auctions that we do and the generosity of our players and our employees and our fans. So tomorrow is about raising more money. And we always say, if we can raise $17,159, $1 a person, that's a great Hockey Fights Cancer. We normally raise about 10 times that, though. So it's really nice to let all of our fans' passions come to life through donations. And, again, celebrate those that are still with us and then remember those that have passed. And if you have not been touched by cancer, you're one of the very, very, very few people in our world that hasn't. Unfortunately, too many of us have been touched by it. And let's face it, if you have been, we need to rid our world of that word.
So the second Hockey Fights Cancer Night will be this Saturday, as you mentioned, a lot of opportunities to help out and support that. And, of course, as we mentioned before, the Pekka Rinne statue unveiling will be in Bridgestone Arena. The ceremony will start at 10 a.m. where Sean, you will speak, Pekka Rinne will speak, and also David Poile will speak. And the plaza opens at 9. It's free to fans. So, listen, like you said, if you haven't met Pekka, go out there. I'm sure it's going to be an amazing ceremony. And I would say get there early because I can imagine Smashville fans will be packing that thing, Sean.
Yeah, you know, we have, I think, Fifth Avenue and Broadway's closed because we know we're going to have large screens. I'm not going to tell people where to go, but I would be on one of the rooftops looking down, whether it be on Rippies or Tootsies. But just get here. It's going to be fun. And the earlier you get here, the earlier you can get inside the building and enjoy all the festivities that we have going on. But it's going to be emotional. I mean, it really, really will be. And, you know, on one hand, I'm so honored that I have a chance to speak. On the other, I never get scared of speaking. As you guys know, I mean, it's easy. I talk too much. But whenever you get a chance to talk about someone like Pekka and his impact on our team, our franchise, this city, it's a little harder because you want to make sure you don't miss anything because it's really hard to properly articulate what he means. And again, I mean, he's the best professional athlete our city has ever seen. And that's special. And that puts him in some pretty incredible company because you could do a whole show on that, by the way, and have 100 people that would be, you know, eligible to be considered that. But obviously he stands atop all of them.
We'll use that for a summer topic. Sean, you've got a very busy weekend ahead of you. Like I said, the plaza will open at 9 a.m. tomorrow. It's free for fans to go, and the ceremony starts at 10 a.m. You're going to want to get a close spot. And then also the Preds tip off at 1 p.m. face the Seattle Kraken for a little matinee hockey and the second Hockey Fights Cancer Night. Sean, you've got a busy weekend. We appreciate you taking some time to join us this morning to make sure we detail it all to tell all the fans. But good luck tomorrow with your speech. Have fun. Enjoy it. And thanks for coming on this morning.
All right. Thank you guys so much. Hey, Junie, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but my favorite uncle's name is Junie.
No way.
Whoa.
I'm going to call you Uncle Junie from now on. Okay?
Okay, Sean. I like that. Listen, I've never met another person named Junie, so maybe you have to formally introduce us.
Well, that will be difficult. He did pass away recently, but every time I talk to him, I think about my Uncle Junie. He was a very interesting individual and real caring man. So you're in good company.
I tell you what, Sean, it was doom and gloom on the show until you came on. You raised the level up, so thank you for making my day with that.
Yeah, let's celebrate UT making the Sweet 16 instead of, oh, gosh, they lost. It was a good season. They overcame some injuries, and they'll be back. The SEC is the best conference in basketball and in football and in baseball. Celebrate that, and now we get to plan for next year. But until then, let's worry about the Preds and talk about our games this weekend.
Yes, let's do it. Sean Henry, Preds CEO and president. Thanks for coming on this morning. As we mentioned, a lot of stuff happening in Bridgestone this weekend. And headlining it, the Pekka Rinne statue unveiling.
# pack the plaza for Pekka.
Ooh, I like that. I like that hashtag.
You can steal that one, Sean. Pack the plaza for Pekka.
Ooh.
# Let's get it trending in here in the 615.
Yes, we love that. I'm sure the plaza will be packed tomorrow. The Preds got the win in overtime last night over the Seattle Kraken. Helps them get one step closer to hopefully securing a playoff spot. Coming up next, we're going to discuss last night's game and can the Preds get the sweep over the Kraken this weekend? Then we'll transition back into some college hoops. You're listening to Chase and Michelle on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app.
It's time for the Daily Power Play.
And the score! A power play goal for the Predators.
Covering the Predators and the NHL.
With a shot that stopped by Saros.
Now on Chase and Michelle.
Matt Duchene will get a chance here in the shootout, breaking in. His shot, and he scores! Predators take a 1-0 lead. Tomasino comes in down the right side, hesitates, he scores! Predators win it! The Predators win in the shootout here tonight. Tomasino ends it all. Duchene got the goal that will be listed as the decider. But Nashville takes this game 2-1 over the Seattle Kraken tonight.
You heard Pete Weber. The Preds top the Kraken 2-1. In a shootout, Matt Duchene and Philip Tomasino get the two goals in the shootout to solidify their win. And a busy weekend for the Nashville Predators. Junie, welcome back into Chase and Michelle. Michelle Knezevic, Junie Riddle, and for Chase McCabe, Nick Keyser with us today as well. A big, busy weekend. I really do love the idea of having a team, if they're traveling really far for a game, Seattle Kraken coming in and doing a back-to-back, a doubleheader, a Thursday, and then a Saturday game.
Think about that for fans, though. You know, if you're a fan of the Seattle Kraken, yeah, that's like, oh, well, we need to go take a, you know, a long trip to Nashville. And, you know, that's hotels. That's, yeah, that's a whole experience to get to see your team. You know, baseball fans do that a lot. So to kind of see it in hockey,
I love it.
It makes it kind of cool.
Yeah, I love the idea. And, I mean, we just talked to Sean Henry. A very busy weekend for this Nashville Predators team. We talked to Greg Wyshynski yesterday, covers the NHL on ESPN, and I asked him the question, you know, how much do these games, and if the Predators could pick up two wins over the Kraken, that help them in getting, you know, one step closer to a playoff spot, because they're really sitting right there, and the schedule's not getting easier, right? We talked about that road trip. A lot of the games that they played after the trade deadline, a lot of the teams, like the Coyotes, those teams aren't going to be playoff teams. They did get a big win over the LA Kings, though, on that road trip. You know, they're going to be a team that'll be in the postseason. So this Nashville Predators team, the Kraken got on the board first last night. Then Preds were able to come back. It was a packed house in Bridgestone. I haven't been to a game in a minute. And it was a great atmosphere last night. Now you have the Pecorine statue unveiling tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., it's going to be a whole ceremony for him. You know, the first ever Nashville athlete, I think Tennessee athlete, to get a statue. And, I mean, Sean Henry, he was very confident in saying, you know, he, like, how much he means to this organization and the community as a whole. I mean, I didn't have the pleasure of covering him much. Actually, my first day, Junie, at the game was his retirement ceremony.
Really?
Ryan Porth texted me and was like, hey, it's going to be a crazy day. I'll let you know when you get in. And I got in at about 5:15. I was still training, my first day training. He's like, just soak everything up. We're having breaking news. And it was when Pekka announced his retirement. And I attended the press conference. And from that moment on, you know, no, I haven't got to experience him playing, but you can tell based off of that day, the way, how much he meant to this community and just his impact he had here. So they're going to unveil the I'm excited to see it tomorrow, Jimmy.
I am super excited to see it as well. And I've kind of mentioned this, you know, I grew up in a town where hockey is almost non-existent. You know, in Kentucky, not a lot of people watch hockey, but you know, when I came down and went to school at Western Kentucky, there is a large Predators fan base up in Bowling Green. And the first player's name that I ever remember hearing about when I was kind of learning and diving into the Nashville Predators and watching games was Pekka Rinne. And then you come down here and you already know how big of a superstar that this player is, a big-time guy, led them, you know, to the cup run. You know, Sean highlighted, you know, his two shutouts playing against the Chicago Blackhawks, a series that, you know, we hear Chase talk about all the time, mm-hmm. about how, you know, no one was really going to give the Predators a chance in that series against Chicago. And then they wind up sweeping them on their way, on their, you know, Stanley Cup playoff run. So Pekka Rinne is a huge player and a figure here in Nashville, especially on the ice. But, you know, now being able to cover the team, you start to hear rumblings about what these players are actually like behind closed doors. And when I tell you that there's not an athlete in Tennessee that I hear more good things about than Pekka Rinne, I mean, I can't express that enough. I mean, anytime that somebody who knew him or worked with him or was a part of the Nashville Predators organization while he was here, whenever they bring him up, it's always, he was a great player, but what he did for the community and, mm-hmm. And how he was as a person and how truly humble he is, it speaks magnitudes on what kind of person he really was and how much he means to this community. So if anybody's deserving of having their number in the rafters and a statue out on the plaza and a legacy that he has truly left, it is him.
Well, he was a big part of this city falling in love with the game of hockey. You mentioned it. Hockey's not big in Kentucky, Tennessee, and Nashville Predators came here 25 years ago, I think, almost on the dot, and look at how much it's grown. Pekka's getting the statue. We mentioned the plaza will open at 9 a.m. tomorrow. The ceremony will start at 10 a.m. David Poile will speak. Pekka Rinne will speak. Sean Henry will speak. And I can imagine you'll see a lot of players out there. I can imagine the plaza will be packed. We're going to start. Junie and I are going to start the hashtag Pack the Plaza for Pekka. I love that, Junie. But, you know, there also is a lot on the line on the ice, you know, like switching to this current Nashville Predators team, all this exciting stuff for Pekka Rinne, this ceremony. But here's a team right now that's just on the cusp of a wild card spot, has a very difficult remaining schedule. They play the Kraken again, which will be Saturday after the statue unveiling. They play Toronto then, day after that. Then they play Boston in Boston on that Tuesday, and Pittsburgh. So, you know, Gary pointed out on the text line and said, pretty sure the Preds have the hardest remaining strength of schedule. So these games are going to be tough. You know, we look at Boston, President's Trophy team, very dominant this year. They're playing in Boston, mm-hmm. in that arena. I can imagine it'll be a packed house. So it's going to be a tough stretch, and I think it's going to give us a really good idea of, okay, how do these young players perform in a moment like this? When you talk about expectations, I don't think there's an expectation for the Preds to make the playoffs, especially once they wave the white flag at the trade deadline.
I definitely think the expectation of this team is to not make the playoffs. I think any sort of success that they have on the tail end of this season is just, you know, icing on the cake. You know, no one expected this team to compete. If you sat here 2 months ago, back in January, when this team seemed like it was dead in the water, you have a bunch of contracts that players weren't living up to. There was a bunch of players that, you know, really kind of stayed a little bit longer than what most, you know, fans and media members would like, you know, to say that they did. And now you look at this team and they sold off, you know, a bunch of players, got a really great haul back, freed up a bunch of cap space, got rid of some contracts that they didn't want to hold on to during this kind of rebuild, retool. And on top of that, you look at, you know, Philip Forsberg, Juuso Parsonen, Ryan Johansson, Alexander Carrier,
and guys who are injured now too.
That's what I'm saying is you're saying all these guys get injured, you move off all these players that have been, you know, key contributors to your team for the past couple years, and they're still fighting and they're still competing. And I know we've been kind of on this, can they catch Winnipeg? Well, Winnipeg is only 1 point behind the Seattle Kraken. And the Seattle Kraken currently sit at the number one wild card spot.
Mm-hmm.
If the Nashville Predators can get a win over Seattle again, we could be potentially talking about this team trying to catch Seattle, because they've been kind of on, you know, moving downhill a little bit. You know, they weren't in a wild card position. Now they've, you know, they've kind of gone down a bit, and they're moving towards that. So if the Preds can get a good win against Seattle, maybe instead of trying to catch Winnipeg, they can start going and moving towards the Kraken instead.
Yep, so they're sitting right there. They got the Seattle Kraken after the Pecorine statue unveiling tomorrow. Then they got Toronto, Boston, and Pittsburgh. So a lot of tough matchups as the Preds head forward. Gary mentioned on the text line, very tough strength of schedule as they close out this regular season, Junie. Coming up next, we're going to switch back to the Tennessee Volunteers. Vols fans, how are you feeling this morning? What is your temperature on Rick Barnes? You made it to the Sweet 16. That doesn't happen a lot in the Tennessee Volunteers basketball history. They've only been to the Elite Eight once in this program's history. Are you happy? Do you view this season as a success? Or are you disappointed? We want to hear from Tennessee Volunteers fans. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. You're listening to Chase and Michelle on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle in for Chase McCabe. Nick Kieser, we are live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios this morning. And now we're going to go to our phone line. We've got Bruce on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Bruce, how are we doing this morning?
Oh, I'm doing good. How are y'all?
Doing good. Thanks for calling in. What do you got on the Vols for us?
Well, I just think everybody needs to chill out. I really appreciated, I forget his name, I'm sorry, the president, CEO of the Preds, and I was at the game last night. It was a nail-biter, but what a great win.
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't even supposed to be here. We lost our quarterback. It would be losing your point guard is like losing your quarterback.
Yes.
And yet, anybody that wants to come down on Rick Barnes, go watch the Duke game. We have people on this show guaranteeing a loss. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I
and
do.
We not only beat them, we beat them pretty handily. So that's coaching. So we figured out how to not turn the ball over. And guess what? The guy that controls the ball is your point guard. That's the guy that keeps you from getting so many turnovers. He's the one that distributes the ball. So I'm with your previous guy you were interviewing.
Sean Henry.
I'm happy to be here. Yeah, I hated that we lost. Don't get me wrong. I woke up this morning going, man, 1-1. Now I ran home or drove home as fast as I could so I could see the ball game because I didn't have it on at the Predators game,
mm-hmm.
Which blew my mind. But only to see us lose to a team that, you know, they played better than us in the second half. Mm-hmm. Kudos to them. So anyway, that's all I got. The people that are getting down on Rick Barnes, be happy you have them. There aren't very many of them out there.
Thanks for the call, Bruce. I agree with a lot of what he said. I mean, you know, I like his perspective, and I think it's, you know, refreshing because I also do think it's important to realize getting to the second weekend of the tournament is extremely hard. And it's something to be proud of, especially for a program that historically has not been a basketball school.
Yeah.
And, I mean, think about last year is the first time they won the SEC championship in over 40 years. I mean, that's a benchmark for that program. And the expectations as a Vols fan have been raised. And a lot of that is due to Rick Barnes and where he has brought this program. I mean, Bruce said it. They lost their point guard. And I think we saw how the team performed in the SEC tournament, and the thought was, oh, well, you lose your point guard, and, you know, the expectations for March, they go down because your point guard is your main ball handler. I mean, they influence the game so much. Look at
especially at the college level.
Look at the Marquise Noel kid from Kansas State we're talking about. They influence the game so much running your offense. So then expectations get brought down, and then I think the Duke game, you have to credit coaching for that. It was such a quick turnaround to then have to prep for them.
And it was also The Duke game was one of the best games that the Vols played all year long. I mean, it hands down was the best game that they played without Zakai Ziegler. And the numbers were just outliers. Their three-point percentage, they hit their shots from the line. Duke had a really off game. Like, the stars aligned for you to get that win. And it's just tough for me to hear Vols fans say, well, the season was a failure because we should have beat FAU. You're basically saying that your season was a failure because your team didn't do what it's only done once in its history, and that's make it to the Elite Eight. You made it to the Sweet 16. You lost one of your best players and still won two tournament games. That is a successful season in my eyes.
So we got a text from the text line, didn't put his name, but says, it's time to move on from Barnes. He refuses to adjust. He chooses to be completely one-dimensional with a sole focus on defense. This is coaching malpractice in a sport where nobody gets shut out. A couple thoughts on that. And Bruce mentioned it towards the end of his phone call, and he said, you know, you should be thankful you have Rick Barnes. Rick Barnes is, you know, a great regular season coach. But in college basketball and in most sports, nobody looks at how well you do in the regular season. That is not how you're measured as a coach. You are measured by the success you have in the postseason. Who ever talks about regular season records anymore, Junie? Whether it be the NFL, whether it be the NBA, whether it be college basketball, college football, what matters is championships.
No, I mean, I definitely agree with you.
And he's had a lot of great teams. You know, Kevin Durant at Texas, when he was at Providence, four Tennessee teams here not too long ago that I bring up the team all the time, Admiral Schofield, Grant Williams. But the tournament is not what it – college basketball has expanded, and with the transfer portal and with NIL – it's not easy to win like UCLA did for however many years in a row and Coach K did. The game has changed so much.
It's hard to establish a program. The one and done's when John Calipari really started to make that the fad of college basketball just changed the entire dynamic of the game. I mean, I grew up watching, you know, guys stay for, you know, 3 and 4 years, really developing. And the college game was literally an amateur version for the pros. Like, yeah, there was a select few that would go straight out of high school. There was a select few that would only go to college for 1 year. But typically a lot of guys would stay and develop and learn and grow. And you don't really necessarily see that as much, which makes it harder, which is kind of why you see certain teams like have a really good year. And then the next year they're out of the tournament. And the following year, it's a different team every single year. And you implement the transfer portal, and it just adds a whole
that
new element to
NIL.
To this.
I mean, we're not seeing teams stay together. You know, some of the teams that are staying together are the FAUs, and I could imagine, you know, one of their guards who's young could be getting a call up just by his performance in the tournament to go play for maybe, you know, a step up conference, right? So you don't know how your team is going to look. And usually at the end of a college basketball season, we can kind of illustrate what the team might look like next year. You see, okay, this person's a freshman, this person's a sophomore, senior. You don't know. You have no idea.
Not anymore.
But if you choose to look at this Tennessee team and guess estimate who will be back, you know, next year, Jonas Adu, he's a sophomore. Julian Phillips, I don't know if he'll go to the NBA. I don't think he's personally a first-round pick, but if he could develop for another year, you know, Zakai Ziegler will be back. He'll be another huge leader on this team. Meshack will be back. So, you know, you look at some of these guys who took on bigger roles this season, and they have a good recruiting class coming in. They'll be successful. But, you know, the way I look at this Tennessee program is they've had really successful basketball teams as of recent. And the SEC as a whole has taken a step up.
And they've been a part of that reason as to why they've stepped up, because they've been a consistent winning team. This whole fire Barnes over this is just, it's over regurgitated. And I just think that Vols fans need to be grateful for what they have because the grass isn't always greener.
The grass isn't always greener on the other side. So, Vols fans, if you want Rick Barnes out, who do you want? Who would you want to take over this Tennessee program? We'll be taking answers on that on our text line for the rest of the show. But coming up next, starting the second hour of Chase and Michelle, Mike Vrabel is at a pro day just about 3 hours north of you here. Starts at 10 a.m. Junie and I will discuss on the other side. You're listening to Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app.